Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 35th chapter, verses 20 through 26. Kanda tamakita kachita vesho Kalpakata navita yamanayam Nanda sunarana ketava vatsa Narmada pranayinam vichahara Mandavairupava janakulam Manaya malaya chasparashena Vandinastamupate vaganaye Varigita valigi parivavu. O sinless Yashoda, your darling child, the son of Maharishnanda, has festively enhanced his attire with a jasmine garland, and he is now playing along the Jamuna in the company of the cows and cowherd boys, amusing his dear companions. The gentle breeze honors him with its soothing fragrance of sandalwood, while the various upadevas standing on all sides like panegyrists offer their music, singing, and gifts of tribute. Mukam karati vakshanayam panganam kayapetri Yathikam panaham nande shibhan vacharyam Om jnana tiranasya jnana sharashanakaya Chakshunitam yena tasamai shibhanayam. So what do we remember from yesterday's class on these verses? Gopi sing of Krishna. Yes? The flute of Krishna is the expression of the nectar of Krishna's lips. And what else? Yes?
That when Krishna plays his flute, the rocks melt.
The rocks melt. Yes, when there's no water, Krishna plays his flute, Giriraj melts, and the cows drink Giriraj. Okay, anything else? Right. So although the gopis wanted to be with Krishna in the daytime, they felt very great pleasure by remembering Krishna and what he was doing at different times of the day. Yes, yes. So even the animate and inanimate are attracted, but what to speak of us? Yes. Good. Relieve the distress of the earth. Landlord is his spout. Yes, Adi Purush. Uttam Adhikari does not necessarily see Krishna at every moment, but he's qualified to see Krishna at any moment. Yes. Right. Krishna's chest is like a cloud. It covers the sun of the chest of the gopis.
And his ornament is like large glands and
ornaments like flying cranes.
Lakshmi
is like lightning, which is stationary lightning.
The sound of the flute affects in different way to the different
108 group leaders of cows, and he counts them on his jeweled beads. His jeweled beads at Tirukkadamba. Okay, so now we'll go on to this verse. It's different there because they're talking to Yashoda here. And they're telling what he's doing on the way home because she's in anxiety. Why is he coming so late? Remember, it was 9 hours already. It was around 5:30 in the evening and still he wasn't home. So now the gopis are describing to Yashoda what's happening on the way home. What was Krishna doing that was making him so late? What was causing the delay? Purport. Oh, let's see the verse again. That he's covered with a jasmine garland, playing along the Jamuna in the company of cows and cowherd boys, amusing his dear companions. The gentle breeze honors him with its soothing fragrance of sandalwood, while the various upadevas standing on all sides like panegyrists offer their music, singing, and gifts of tribute.
What does this mean, panegyrists?
Like singers.
Oh, singers.
Poets. Poets. Purport, Sri Jiva Goswami explains, the gopis are again in the courtyard of Mother Yashoda, Queen of Raj. They're trying to encourage her by describing Krishna's return to Vrindavan after he has spent the day herding cows and playing. Sri Vishnu Chakravarti comments that the Upadevas, the minor demigods mentioned here, include the Gandharvas, who are famous for their celestial music and dancing. So don't worry about your son, they're saying. He's very happy. He's having fun. He's amusing his friends. He's at the Jamuna having a bath and playing. And then there's different people offering him prayers, so that's why he is late. So before I go on, I would like to just review a little bit of the verses that we heard yesterday. What happens the first thing in the morning? It's kind of like Ashtakali Alila, in a sense. So what was the first thing that happened?
Yeah.
The devas, the demigods, in the sky.
Demigod
blessings. Yes, they were hearing the flute first, when he was going up from Vrindavan to go to the forest. So then the second thing was?
Cows.
Yeah, cows. They're on the land. Now the cows, the bulls, they're all standing in groups, and they're affected by the sound of his flute. So after the cows comes?
Trees.
Rivers.
Went to take bath,
what? Maybe he went to take bath. So the rivers are.
He milked the cows and then he went to take bath.
Milk the cows. Well, this is the cows are going out. Okay, went to take bath, and after rivers come the trees and creepers. They respond to his flute playing with ecstasy, and then the after the trees and creepers.
Cranes,
the waterfall far away. And after them,
clouds.
The clouds were back up in the sky again. And he's on the mountains, it's the middle of the day, and the clouds are giving him seva. So then, up in the sky, the very intelligent Brahma, Shiva, and Indra, they're confused, they're getting confused
they
by hearing his flute. They lost their identity, their discrimination.
And
so then after that, now Krishna's, we're back on the ground, and he's strolling on the earth, his footprints are there, and then the flute plays, and the gopis themselves express their feelings, that when they hear the flute, when they see his glance, they are agitated. So two verses on how the gopis, so the black deer's wives, that was the last verse, that even the deer are agitated, and he's counting his cows on the string of gems. So after counting his cows, he's continuing, but he got distracted by the Jamuna River. And well, actually, Jiva Goswami explains how he went to Jamuna at the end of the day. The time of collecting the cows was bringing the cows to drink for the second time in the day. So he brings the cows twice a day to drink at the Jamuna. So this was the second time on his way home that he brought the cows to drink. And so Yashoda was very distressed, and the gopis are trying to make her feel better in three pairs of verses here, these last three pairs of verses. They're trying to pacify Yashoda. Jiva Goswami says they're trying to pacify her by demonstrating that his pastimes give pleasure to everyone, and they can give everyone the pleasure of rendering devotional service unto him. So they're explaining to her why Krishna is late. In these two verses, he played in the Jamuna, and after having bath, he sportingly played on her shore. And then Jiva Goswami says, by the words Kunda and Manda, referring to the wind, we can ascertain this is the month of Kartik. And because we don't find jasmine in the spring, and because the wind is harsh in the late autumn and winter seasons, so it must be Kartik that they're speaking these verses. And we'll find out actually why it is Kartik in the next chapter. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that to relieve himself of fatigue, Krishna has bathed in the Jamuna and sat on the bank. And to please his friends, who were so enthusiastic, he dressed himself comically with kunda flower garlands. So after his bath, and he took all these garlands and he was putting them on in a very funny way. And that was amusing to his friends.
How did they look like this?
I don't know. How should I know? Read Nectar of Devotion. Read Nectar of Devotion and you'll see where how he wears his garlands. As he walked on the bank of the river, the wind began to blow gently and pleasantly. Krishna gave joy to his friends by giving and receiving jokes and defeating their jests. Oh, sinless one, Yashoda. Now they're talking to Yashoda. Another reason why she should not worry. Now, the main duty of mothers is to worry. Even if everything is all right and the son is healthy, still they worry. I know, because I am a mother. So this is the constitutional duty of mothers, and Yashoda is all started with Yashoda. So now they're telling Yashoda, sinless one, you've not committed any sins previously or in this life by which danger could come to your son. So why do you uselessly worry about danger from demons if he is a little late? Don't worry. You're pious. Nothing will happen to your son. He's the son of Nanda, who is famous as the jewel of piety. So Nanda is pious and so are you. And he is the son of your son, endowed with the most spotless fame, so you are Yashoda. We see children fall into danger only when the parents have bad karma. Therefore, there is no danger for your son. So if somebody is coming late, then the mind starts imagining, oh, maybe he had an accident, like now so many accidents happen, oh, maybe this happened, maybe that happened, maybe he fell down, maybe he's in the hospital, who knows. The mother starts worrying like that. So Yashoda was thinking, oh, maybe some demon came and gave him trouble. And they're telling him, don't worry. You are pious, Nanda is pious, so there is no danger. Listen as we tell you the reason for his being late, as we have heard it from his friends. The wind, so fragrant and cool from touching the sandalwood trees of Malaya Mountain, that it only blows very slowly, began to blow pleasantly on your son. So he's enjoying the wind. He had his bath. He's joking with his friends. And just like kids, they go to school and they're supposed to come home a certain time, and they don't come home, and then the mother worries. He says, I was just playing with my friends. Why do you worry? The Upadevas, Gandharvas, began to worship him in all ways, including playing musical instruments as they praised his qualities. To accept this worship, he has become late. So now the Upadevas, the Gandharvas, are glorifying him. So he's late. Those of quality delight in seeing the person of quality. Therefore, there is no need to worry for your son. For if they are worshipping him, it is your good fortune. So don't worry, Yashoda. All these verses are to inform Yashoda what is happening on the way home and why he's so late. First, he got distracted by the Jamuna and playing. And then he got distracted by the prayers of the Upadevas. Yeah, they're minor demigods, not big ones like Brahma and Shiva. Small ones. So verse 22-23. Krishna gotanam upayati nante Gita veluranu gedita kirti Utsavam shalaru chakpiti shinam Purayam kurara jascharu tasak Ditsayati sivira shisha esha Deva kichatara pur uduraja. Out of great affection for the cows of Braj, Krishna became the lifter of Govardhan Hill. At the end of the day, having rounded up all his own cows, he plays a song on his flute while exalted demigods standing along the path worship his lotus feet, and the cowherd boys accompanying him chant his glories. His garland is powdered by the dust raised by the cow's hooves, and his beauty, enhanced by his fatigue, creates an ecstatic festival for everyone's eyes. Eager to fulfill his friend's desires, Krishna is the moon arisen from the womb of Mother Yashoda. Purport. According to the Acharyas, at this point, the gopis climbed into the watchtowers of Vrindavan's houses so they could see Krishna as soon as possible when he returned home. Mother Yashoda was very anxious for her son to come back, and therefore she had the tallest of the beautiful young gopis climb up to see when he would arrive. It is implied here that Krishna was somewhat delayed on the way home because his lotus feet were being worshipped by great demigods along the path. So now the big demigods are there, and they're worshipping Krishna. Brahma, Shiva, Indra, they have come to offer their daily prayers. And we will see that, yes, I think I'll read that later. To the demigods, all day long, they're just up in the sky watching Krishna. And finally, at night, they come down to offer their prayers. Once a day, they come down to offer their evening prayers. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, or no, this is somebody else, and I don't know who, because I didn't write it down. Maybe Vishnu. Seeing that my son has not come back at the end of twilight, I will now kill myself. This is Yashoda. Fearing this response from Mother Yashoda, the gopis then gave reasons why Krishna would come quickly in order to calm her. Is this Vishnu Chakravarti?
Yes, Vishnu.
Okay, good. So they're afraid that Yashoda will kill herself because Krishna hasn't come back on time. So she's of extreme worry of a mother. Being affectionate to the bulls tied up in Vraj, remembering the suffering and separation from him, he has ignored the worship of the Upadevatas and is coming quickly. So this is the gopi speaking to her. One cannot say that for her cowherd boy, the skillful singing of the lowly Gandharvas is more attractive than giving grass to the cows or seeing tickling or touching their bodies. Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill to protect the cows. From this we see he has great affection for the cows. So that's why he's not waiting for the prayers. He's not stopping to hear the prayers of the Gandharvas, but he keeps going. He's keeping on going because he's thinking of the cows waiting for him, suffering and separation. So from this we see he has great affection for the cows. Though the Gandharvas may have heaps of qualities, Krishna has not a morsel of affection for them. So then Yashoda speaks, if that is so, then he would have been here immediately. Thus, the gopis give the reason for his lateness. Brahma, Shiva, and others are now offering their respects along the path. The devatas, coming from their houses and situating themselves close by in the sky, watch Krishna all day in bliss. So, when Krishna was here, the demigods let somebody else do their work, and they just went out to watch Krishna. They gave their work to their servants, whoever's below them, and they were out all day. Of course, it wasn't a big day for them because so many of our days are in there one day. But they were out there watching Krishna. And every evening, when evening came here, they would come and offer prayers to Krishna. So this was their pleasure. When Krishna returns in the evening, they also return to their houses, but not before descending from the sky to earth to offer their respects to his lotus feet to obtain his mercy. What can he do in this circumstance? So he wasn't paying attention to the Gandharvas, but Brahma Shiva, little attention. This request from the devatas is a greater cause of his lateness. But do you not see the good fortune in the devatas offering their respects to your son's feet? Why do you lament? And so they're trying to pacify Yashoda. Yashoda, with choked voice, and she's not so pacified, said, oh, young women, please, go quickly to the roof and see how far my son is distant. Going to the roof, the gopis then spoke to her in loud voices, stopping all the cows in one place with the sound of his flute to fulfill desires of well-wishers. Krishna is now coming. He's brilliant in his fatigue, a festival for the eyes, with garland covered by dust raised by the cows' hooves. So whatever was said for the benefit of Mother Yashoda was also for the benefit of other gopis to whom they threw indirect glances. So then it talks about the garland he was wearing and why it's full of dust. When Krishna himself, there was not so much dust on him, but the garland was full. And that's why it was given by Radharani. Vishnu Chakravarti says, because his friends repeatedly wiped off the dust with their own chadars from his body, but the dust had entered deep in the garland. If they had tried to wipe it off, then the petals of the flowers would have become broken. So Krishna does not discard this garland, even though it's dirty and neither does he put on a new garland, which a servant is holding ready in the folds of his cloth. This indicates Krishna wants very much to exhibit this favorite garland being worn upon his neck because it was fashioned by his beloved with her own hands and given to him through one of her companions. So somehow during the day, Radharani made a garland and managed to slip it to Krishna through one of her friends. And so Krishna is very attached to this garland. He doesn't want to give it up. He's holding on to it, even though it's full of dust. So verse 24 and 25. Mata vikunita nakshana isha manatasa suhidam panamali badara pandivadana mitukanta mandayankanaka kundala lakshmya yarupati tiradara javihara yamini patiri vaishari nante As Krishna respectfully greets his well-wishing friends, his eyes roll slightly as if from intoxication. He wears a flower garland, and the beauty of his soft cheeks is accentuated by the brilliance of his golden earrings and the whiteness of his face, which has the color of a buttera berry. With his cheerful face resembling the moon, Lord of the Night, Lord of the Yadus, moves with the grace of a regal elephant. Thus he returns in the evening, delivering the cows of Braj from the heat of the day. So notice now the concentration is on Krishna's face, the beauty of his face, because that is where the gopis especially are looking. At his face, because that's how they worship him, with his glance, and they send glances to each other which are full of meaning. And so all their concentration now is on his face. Purport. The word gavam is constructed from the Sanskrit word go, which means cow or senses. Thus, Sri Krishna, by coming back to the village of Braj, relieved the inhabitants of Vrindavan from the distress their eyes and other senses felt during the day because of being separated from direct contact with him. Now, there's a commentary by Madhvacharya on the moon, three names of the moon, Manava, Bhadra, and Sindhu. And he says, one who knows these names becomes free from material desire. Indeed, one who knows these names, originally names of Vishnu, becomes free from the whole cycle of material existence. Manava, Bhadra, and Sindhu. Manava, Bhadra. So these must be mentioned in this verse. Bhadra. They must be mentioned here. So then Vishnu Chakravarti speaks. The gopis are speaking. Though he has arrived at the edge of the town here, why is he slightly delayed? His eyes are mad, rolling about due to the bliss from seeing his father and other loved ones, or due to love generated from seeing the gopis. So there's two meanings. Why his eyes are rolling in intoxication. One is vatsalyaras, and the first meaning is vatsalyaras. Second meaning is madhyaras. So this will be understood later. So he's reciprocating with everyone as he returns to the village. Everyone, his mother, father, and the gopis, are all feeling separation from him. So now with his eyes, he is reciprocating. Vishwanath Chakravarti says he's giving some acknowledgement of respect by nodding his head, since though a prince, he was still young and not obliged to strictly follow the etiquette according to scriptural rules. So he didn't offer obeisances to his parents, but he was just nodding his head. To the priests, here it says, he gives respect to those dear ones, Sasuhridam, offering blessings, the priests, elders, brothers, servants, and tambula makers. This is the reason for his delay. So he's coming home and everybody's there to greet him, hundreds, thousands of people, and so he's late. He's reciprocating with everyone. He's coming slowly, he's nodding his head, and he's glancing, and he's doing so many things. So that's why he's a bit delayed. But actually, now he's here. Now he has arrived home. Well, actually, no, he's on the edge of the village. He hasn't yet come in. So this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti says. He's on the edge of the village, very significant. Though he's arrived at the edge of the town here, why he is slightly delayed. So he's at the edge of the town. These prayers, these remembrances end when Krishna is at the edge of the town. Here it says also that his tender cheeks were decorated with a glint from his gold earrings. Krishna suggests as the Lord of the Yadus, which here means Lord of the Gopas. The reason has been explained previously. Anybody remember why Lord of the Yadus means Lord of the Gopas? 10:5:20. Nanda Maharaj was?
Yadava.
Okay, yes. He is a relative of the Yadus. He's in the Yadu dynasty, actually. But his mother was a Vaishya and father was a Yadu dynasty. That's why he is in the Vaishya community. He walked slowly, like the king of the elephants. With happy face, he approached nearer, cooling the eyes of the inhabitants of Braj, which had become hot due to separation during the day. And so the effect of the separation, we heard before, that the daytime, hot, the daytime is very hot for the residents of Vrindavan, especially the gopis, because of the heat of separation. And the nighttime when they meet, it's cool because it's the moon of union with Krishna. And so now seeing Krishna, the hot eyes are becoming cool from the pain of separation. So verse 26, Shukadeva Goswami said, O king, thus during the daytime, the women of Vrindavan took pleasure in continuously singing about the pastimes of Krishna. And those ladies' minds and hearts, absorbed in him, were filled with great festivity. So here is the verse which explains that they were actually happy. Maha Udaya, experiencing festivity. Maha Udaya. Purport. This verse definitely confirms that the so-called pain of the heartbroken gopis is actually great spiritual bliss. On the material platform, pain is pain, period. But on the spiritual platform, so-called pain is simply a different variety of spiritual ecstasy. In Western countries, people take pleasure in mixing different flavors of ice cream to produce wonderful combinations of flavor. Similarly, on the spiritual platform, Sri Krishna and his devotees expertly mix the flavors of spiritual bliss. Thus, every day was a treat for the gopis. So, our commentator, whoever made the purport, is comparing separation and meeting with different flavors of ice cream. Interesting comparison. So then Vishwanath says, Parikshit, O Parikshit, the gopis' minds had concentrated on Krishna, and Krishna's mind was centered on them. Because Krishna and his beloved gopis were mutually vishai and ashai, they concentrated their minds on each other. Thus, because they continually relished each other at every moment, both in separation and meeting, through their minds, it is said in this verse that they enjoyed Remi-Rei, separation, during the day. So, by their minds, in separation, they are meeting. Krishna was thinking of them, they were thinking of Krishna. And in that thought, there is union. Although they are separated, there is union. Krishna comes in the heart, comes in their mind, and so they're always thinking of him. And so here he explains, prema has two states, union and separation. Though the person absorbed in Krishna appears to be suffering in separation, actually he has attained the highest state of bliss eternally. In this way, the highest degree of prema is manifest. I think there's something here that I wanted to read later, but I think it's very appropriate for this point. So let me see if I can find it. Separation and meeting. Why is the gopi's mood in service the highest, the top of loving devotion? The paramour relationship Krishna has with the gopis, unlike the relationship he has with his friends, wives, or parents, are socially unacceptable. Thus, for Krishna and the gopis, separation is a natural state of affairs. So like for the wives, it's natural to be with Krishna. But if the gopis are with Krishna, it's unnatural because they're not married to him. The separation is natural. This is from Krishna Sangati. And when the gopis finally do get to meet Krishna after overcoming countless obstacles, separation from him is inherent in every moment of their meeting. So even when they're with Krishna, they're thinking, oh no, maybe the mother-in-law will come, or maybe something will happen, somebody will come, and we'll be separated. And so they're always thinking separation is always there, even when they're with Krishna. This dominance of the mood of separation, even in the act of meeting, enriches the relationships and makes ever fresh each meeting the gopis have with Krishna. So if somebody's always with you, it's kind of boring. Familiarity breeds contempt, as they say in the West. And if they're always there with you every day, you think, oh, I wish somebody else was with me. So even when they're with Krishna, they're thinking he may leave at any moment. So then it makes it very exciting that they're not sure. There's this uncertainty about it. Yet with the wives, it's predictable, but with the gopis, it's very uncertain. So such novelty is conspicuous by its absence in Krishna's meetings with his wives, who achieve lifelong companionship with Krishna only after an initial effort. Okay. Then Rupa Goswami describes various types of separation. Okay. So I'll just read this one last paragraph. Some types of vipralamba and sambhoga relate exclusively to the taste of conjugal love, madhurya bhav, with Krishna. There is one type of separation, however, common to all rasas, pravasa, separation by distance. So that is the one when Krishna goes to Mathura. Now in the Krishna book, Srila Prabhupada describes about Krishna's attractiveness and how we can also easily associate with Krishna even now. Prabhupada says, such descriptions of Krishna's transcendental pastimes and activities were remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan. They give us some idea of how attractive Krishna is, not only to human beings, but to all animate and inanimate objects. In Vrindavan, everyone and everything is attracted to Krishna, including the trees, the plants, the water, and animals like the deer and cows. That is the perfect description of Krishna's all-attractiveness. The example of the gopis is very instructive to persons who are trying to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Hopefully, that's us. We're trying to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So therefore, we can take instruction from the example of the gopis. Prabhupada says, one can very easily associate with Krishna simply by remembering his transcendental pastimes. Everyone has a tendency to love someone. That Krishna should be the object of love is a central point of Krishna consciousness. By constantly chanting Hare Krishna mantra and remembering the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, one can be fully in Krishna consciousness and thus make his life sublime and fruitful. So that is what we are trying to do. Be absorbed, always chanting Hare Krishna and remembering pastimes of Krishna. Kirtanaya Sadahari and Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. These two together. Prabhupada often said that in his purports, that we should not only chant Hare Krishna always, but we should also serve Srimad Bhagavatam, hear the pastimes of Krishna always. And, pardon me? I was reading from Krishna book on this chapter, 35, end of the chapter. Before, I was reading from Krishna book. Yeah. Okay, so any questions or comments on these verses? Leela, Dori. Because of the separation, there is a renewed joy of being with him.
But because he's always ever...
He's ever fresh, but the separation nourishes that. The separation nourishes it. There is, I mean, the wives are always satisfied too. I mean, they have Krishna all the time, practically. But it's different when you can't rely on him. You can't really expect that he's going to be there. It's a whole different mood. So Krishna wants to experience all the flavors, not just the flavor of somebody being with him all the time. He experiences that too with his wives. But with the gopis, he wants to experience this other flavor of uncertainty, of they have to overcome obstacles to get him, and it's very exciting that way. It nourishes the prema. Yes, Adipurush, anything? No. Okay, yeah. Rasa dance? In Rasa dance, they were meeting.
Only one chapter?
Only one chapter. No, when he stole their clothes. When they're together, they don't pray. They do other things. They joke.
Shankachuda,
right, okay. They were together in Shankachuda chapter, that's right, correct. But Lord Chaitanya's teaching in Shukadeva is in the mood of separation there. In the beginning, the first few chapters, there was more. He was together with his friends, he's together with his parents, but the gopis, it's separation. He's always separate. Yeah, so not so much union in Bhagavatam. Then again, when Krishna leaves, chapter 39, they will be there stopping the chariot. And then Eku Kshetra, we'll see Krishna. Yeah, so the mood is separation. Predominant mood. Oh yeah, okay. That is Madhvacharya. He says anyone who knows these names, let's see what he says. There are names of the moon also. One who knows these names becomes free from the cycle of material existence, and free from material desire.
What's the name again?
Manava Bharara Sindhu. Bharara, Bharara, like berry. Bharara, Bharara.
No, first one.
Manava.
Manava?
Yeah.
Bharara.
Bharara, like Bhadari Narayan. It's a berry. Sindhu.
Sindhu.
Like Sindhu dish.
It's also named also
Yeah.
But here in the Shloka only Vanamali, Badara, Pandu,
Badano.
But
yeah. No Sindhu. Okay. Madhvacharya is giving you another one for your reference.
This Madhvacharya?
Yeah.
Madhvacharya?
Madhvacharya.
Madhvacharya.
Any other comments or questions in these verses?
What these names says, like Bhadra and Sindhu, what the significance of those names?
Well, I told you what the significance is. You want to know the meaning.
Yeah.
Let's ask Adi Purush. Bhadra is a berry, yeah?
Yes.
Bhadra is a berry.
Some
fruit. Fruit, yeah. You find in Bhadari Kashan. Manava is what, man or mind? Or?
Connected with the mind.
Connected with the mind, yeah. Because the moon is connected. He's Manomaya. Oh, yeah, Sindhu is ocean.
Sindhu is ocean.
Okay. So if there are no further questions, we'll continue with the next chapter, and we'll finish early today, it looks like. And this chapter is chapter 36, Slaying of Arishta, the Bull Demon. And actually, there is a connection between this chapter and the previous chapter, and we'll find out what it is in the first verse. So, reading from 10th Canto, 36th chapter, verses 1 to 15. Shukadeva Goswami said, "The demon Arishta then came to the cowherd village. Appearing in the form of a bull with a large hump, he made the earth tremble as he tore it apart with his hooves." Purport. According to the Sri Vishnu Purana, Arishtasura entered Krishna's village at twilight as the Lord prepared to dance with the gopis. Prodoshare kadachittu yasa sate janadane chasayan samado goshtam arishtasam pagatta. Once, Midway through the period of dusk, when Lord Janardhan was eager to perform rasa dance, Rishtasura madly entered the cowherd village, terrifying everyone. So what I noticed from this verse was the first two words in the verse, ata and tarhi, the next and then. So then when I was reading the last chapter, it seemed like the chapter ended when he was at the end, just at the coming into the village. So now it's like the same time. It's twilight. He hasn't really entered, and I think there will be some acharya which tells us that he hasn't yet come into the village. It's at the end, where before, yes. Let's see our last verse, for today. 15, verse 15 tells that he entered the cowherd village with Balaram. So he was on the outskirts of the village in the last chapter, and now he's still there, and this bull demon comes. So it's like, it fits in from last chapter to this chapter, because in verse 15 it says, now he enters with Balaram. So he wasn't really alone with the gopis at this point, it seems. Yeah, well, he wanted to have the rasa dance. Yeah, I know. But here is entering with Balaram. So it's kind of hard to understand. Yeah, but then of course, after that comes the whole appearance of Radhakund. So it seems like he was actually only with the gopis at that point. But the verse 15 then kind of threw me off when I saw verse 15 where it says he entered the village with Balaram. Having thus killed the demon, he entered the village.
Well, sometimes things don't happen chronologically.
Yeah, it's true. So anyway, we'll just read about Arishtasura and see what happens. Verse 2, Arishtasura bellowed very harshly and pawed the ground. With his tail raised and his eyes glaring, he began to tear up the embankments with the tips of his horns, every now and then passing a little stool and urine. My dear king, clouds hovered about sharp-horned Arishtasura's hump, mistaking it for a mountain. And when the cowherd men and ladies caught sight of the demon, they were struck with terror. Indeed, the strident reverberation of his roar so frightened the pregnant cows and women that they lost their fetuses and miscarriages. Purport. Vedic literature categorizes miscarriages as follows. Ah, chaturta bhavet shava. Up to the fourth month, a premature delivery is called srava. In the fifth and sixth, it is called pata, and after that is considered a birth, prasuti. Verse 5. Domestic animals fled the pasture in fear, O king, and all the inhabitants rushed to Lord Govinda for shelter, crying, Krishna, Krishna. Jiva Goswami says, since they are included in everyone, even the animals were crying out, Krishna, Krishna. No, Jiva Goswami adds a very interesting comment, which I thought would be nice to hear. Even the animals were crying Krishna, chanting his name in this verse. Nectar of Devotion, chapter 29. It is said, when Vishasura appeared in Vrindavan as a bull, all the gopis became greatly affected with fear. Being perturbed in that way, they began to embrace the tamal trees. This is an instance of fear caused by a ferocious animal and of the search for shelter while remembering Krishna in ecstatic love. Upon hearing the jackals crying in the forest of Vrindavan, Mother Yashoda sometimes became very careful about keeping Krishna under her vigilance, fearing that Krishna might be attacked by them. This is an instance of ecstatic love for Krishna in fear, caused by tumultuous sound. This kind of fear is a little different from being actually afraid. When one is afraid of something, he can still think of past and future. But when there is this kind of ecstatic apprehension, there is no scope for such thinking. So when this bull came, everyone was in the ecstatic mood of fear for Krishna, fearing Krishna might be attacked. There is another hopelessness, however, in 31st chapter of Nectar Devotion, which shows attachment for Krishna. When the bull demon attacked the damsels of Braj. They began to cry out, "Dear Krishna, please save us. We are now gone." This is hopelessness with attachment for Krishna. So then now we'll read the verses up to 15. When the Supreme Lord saw the cowherd community distraught and fleeing in fear, he calmed them, saying, "Don't be afraid." Then he called out to the bull demon as follows, "You fool! What do you think you're doing, you wicked rascal, frightening the cowherd community and their animals when I am here just to punish corrupt miscreants like you?" Having spoken these words, the infallible Lord Hari slapped his arms with his palms, further angering Arishta with a loud sound. The Lord then casually threw his mighty serpentine arm over the shoulder of a friend and stood facing the demon. Now, Krishna is not afraid. Purport, Lord Krishna showed his contempt for the ignorant demon. Verse 9, thus provoked, Arishta pawed the ground with one of his hooves, and then, with the clouds hovering around his upraised tail, furiously charged Krishna. So first the clouds were around his hump, and now they moved to his tail. He's moving. Okay, so the clouds are in one place, but he started moving. And the clouds are following him. They think this is something mountain here. Pointing the tips of his horns straight ahead and glaring menacingly at Lord Krishna from the corners of his bloodshot eyes, Arishta rushed toward him at full speed, like a thunderbolt hurled by Indra. The Supreme Lord Krishna seized Arishta Shur by the horns and threw him back 18 steps, just as an elephant might do when fighting a rival elephant. Thus repulsed by the Supreme Lord, the bull demon got up and, breathing hard and sweating all over his body, again charged him in a mindless rage. As Arista attacked, Lord Krishna seized him by the horns and knocked him to the ground with his foot. The Lord then thrashed him as if he were a wet cloth, and finally he yanked out one of the demon's horns and struck him with it until he lay prostrate. Vomiting blood and profusely excreting stool and urine, kicking his legs and rolling his eyes about, Aristasura thus went painfully to the abode of death. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him. Having thus killed the bull demon Arishta, he, who is a festival for the gopis' eyes, entered the cowherd village with Balaram. Purport. This verse exemplifies the sublime contrast of spiritual qualities within Sri Krishna. In one four-line verse, we simultaneously learn that Lord Krishna killed a powerful and wicked demon and that his boyish beauty gave festive pleasure to his young girlfriends. Lord Krishna is as hard as a thunderbolt or soft as a rose, depending on our attitude toward him. Demon Arishta wanted to kill Krishna and all his friends, so the Lord beat him into a wet rag and killed him. The gopis, however, loved Krishna, and thus the Lord boyishly reciprocated their conjugal feelings. So nectar of devotion. This lila is also described. Chapter 44. Conjugal love of Radha Krishna is never disturbed by any personal consideration. The undisturbed nature of the conjugal love between Radha and Krishna is described thus. Just a little distance away from Krishna was Mother Yashoda. And Krishna was surrounded by all his friends. So he's got Vatsalyaras, he's got Sakyaras. In front of his eyes was Chandravali, Radharani's rival. And at the same time, on a chunk of stone in front of the entrance to Braj, stood the demon, known as Vrishasura. But even in such circumstances, when Krishna saw Radharani standing just behind a bush of many creepers, immediately his beautiful eyebrows moved just like lightning toward her. So there are all these different conflicting things are going on around Krishna. Not conflicting, but there were different moods around him. But where was Krishna's mind? On Radharani. So this is some insight from Nectar Devotion, what was happening here in this lila. Although it seems he was completely absorbed in killing Arishtashura, other things were happening. Of course, this verse 15 hints at it. He who is a festival for the gopis' eyes. And so this last verse that we read today hints at the conjugal relationship with the gopis and Radharani. Now, Nectar Devotion, chapter 49. Also, The following illustrates a mixture of several feelings. One of the consort friends of Chandravali saw Krishna was preparing to fight with Rishasura, a demon. She began to think how wonderful Krishna is. His mind is captivated by the eyebrows of Chandravali and a smiling spirit. His snake-like arms are on the shoulder of his friend. At the same time, he's roaring like a lion to encourage Rishasura to fight with him. This is an example of conjugal love, fraternity, and chivalry. Conjugal love is taken here as the whole, and fraternity and chivalry is taken as the parts. So, depends which party you're on. Rupa Goswami, he's talking about the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna is never disturbed. But then again, in a later chapter, he's also talking about Chandravali. And the followers of Chandravali are thinking, oh, Krishna's looking at Chandravali. No, because he was right in front of Krishna. But actually, Rupa Goswami says, but his eyes were going to Radharani. So clever, there's a quality of Krishna. Again, the same thing. This is so all of these things from Nectar Devotion illustrate the quality of Krishna, which is clever. Clever means a person who can perform various types of work at once is called clever. In this connection, one of the gopis said, my dear friends, just see the clever activities of Sri Krishna. He has composed nice songs about the cowherd boys. He's pleasing the cows. By the movement of his eyes, he's pleasing the gopis, and at the same time, he's fighting with demons like Arishtashura. In this way, he's sitting with different living entities in different ways, and he is thoroughly enjoying the situation. So now, from Garga Samhita, we can find out what is the history of this bull demon, Arishtashura. First of all, how did he become friends with Kamsa? Because Kamsa sent him to Vrindavan to kill Krishna. And so the story is told, in the east a great bull demon named Arishta fought with Kamsa, just as one elephant fights another elephant. With its horns, Arishta uprooted a mountain and threw it at Kamsa's head. Kamsa then took a mountain and threw it at Arishta's head. Then with a single punch, the great demon Kamsa made Arishta fall unconscious. So then he got him for his servant. So then the story of his previous life, the fight with Arishtashura is also told in a different way in Garga Samhita, that Krishna says, don't be afraid. Grabbing its horns, Krishna threw the demon 16 miles. Then the demon threw Krishna 16 miles. Then grabbing its tail and whirling it around, Lord Krishna threw the demon to the ground. As a child throws a kamandalu. Its eyes red with anger, Arishta stood up and with his horns uprooted a great mountain. Roaring like thunder, the demon threw the mountain at Lord Krishna. However, Krishna caught it and threw it back at the demon. So, Garga Samhita tells some more details, or maybe it's another day of Brahma, who knows. Hit by the mountain, the demon became a little agitated. It struck the ground with its horns, tore the earth and splashed the water. Grabbing the demon's horns and whirling it around and around, Krishna threw the demon to the ground, just as a great wind picks up and throws a lotus flower. Leaving aside the form of a demon, the soul assumed the form of a Brahman. Bowing before Lord Krishna's lotus feet, he spoke words choked with emotion. He said, I am a Brahman, a student of Brihaspati. My name is Varatantu. I had approached Brihaspati to study under him. One day I sat with my feet facing him. Angry, the sage said, you sit like a bull. You have offended your guru. Fool, now become a bull. O Krishna, by this curse, I became a bull in East Bengal. By associating with demons, I became a demon as well. So it seems like at first he wasn't a demon bull, but then he got some demon friends who were bulls, and he became a demon. So even in the bull society, there are demons. By your mercy, I am now free from that curse of being a demon. Obeisances to you, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudeva, Lord Govinda, who destroys the sufferings of the surrendered devotees. O King, after speaking these words, the student of Brihaspati bowed before Lord Krishna. His effulgence filling the worlds with light, he went by a heavenly airplane to the higher worlds. So he went back to the heavenly planets, not back to Godhead. And the anartha represented by Arishtashura, pride of fraudulent religionists whose practices have been concocted by cheaters. So cheating, people who, in the name of religion, they cheat. This is Harishchandra. Due to their contaminated condition, they show disrespect to the process of pure devotional service to Krishna. Krishna Samhita, it is described about Harishchandra. Nindyani Bajantya Ke Chakta Vaita Vitim Shivam Navame Vishvaste Binashyante Krishna Tejasa. Many weak-hearted people give up the path of regulative principles and enter the path of attachment. When they are unable to realize the soul's spiritual attachment, they behave like Vrishabhasura, Aristasura, Vibhul, by cultivating perverted material attachment. They will be killed by the prowess of Krishna. The example of this obstacle is regularly found among the selfish Dharma Dwajis, the show bottle devotees. So Dharma Dwaji is a term which Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses in his other book, his commentary on the Upadeshamrita. What's the name of that book? I forgot. Bhaktyaloka. There he describes who is the Dharma Dwaji, the pretender, the cheater, in the name of religion. Now we also know that after the killing of Harishchandra, there was the Leela of the appearance of Radha Kund. So tomorrow Burijan will read it from the purport, and today I'll read it from Dinobandhu, so that you'll get two different stories or ways of hearing it. So some details you may hear today, you may not hear tomorrow. From Dina, this is Dina Bandhu's book, Brajalila. Pardon me? Brajalila. The pastime is the appearance of Radha Kund, which happened immediately after killing of Harishchandra. Because Krishna was ready for the rasa dance, so he invited the gopis, okay, let's go have our rasa dance. Radharani said, we can't be associated with you. You've killed a bull. This is a great sin. So Krishna said, well, what do I have to do? How can I get free from the sin? Radharani consulted with the gopis. They said, you'll have to take bath in all the sacred waters of the universe. So we know this happened in Kartik, the appearance of Radha Kund. So there's another, that's another connection between the last chapter and this chapter. It's during Kartik. Krishna said, that will take a long time. How can I be disassociated from you for so long? Even in one moment I can't bear. I'll call all the sacred waters from all the sacred tirthas of the universe here in one place. The gopi said, Krishna, don't try to fool us. We don't believe in your magic. Krishna said, no, I'll call them. You'll see. First he stomped a big depression in the ground with his right foot. Then he played his flute and all the sacred rivers personified came. So he must have, in his flute song, the names of the rivers must have been there. And so they all came. Krishna said, see? The gopi said, how do we know who they are? So Krishna said to the sacred waters, you each give your introduction, chant your mantra, and pour your water in the kund. They all came forward and said, I am Godavari, I am Narmada, I am Saraswati, I am Kuru Jungla, I am the saltwater ocean, I am the Dahi ocean. They chanted their mantra and poured their water in the kund. So this took a long time, till almost midnight. When Krishna saw everyone had come before the gopis, had told their name, given their mantra, and poured their water, he jumped in and took his bath. Then he invited the gopis. Now, you come in the water. Let us enjoy water pastimes together. They said, gopis, how can we come in this water? It's contaminated with your sin. You've done a big sin, killing a bull. Shyamasundara said, that wasn't a bull. It was a demon. He was a demon in the shape of a bull. Radharani said, but we heard from Purnamasi about Vritrasura. He was a demon in the form of a Brahmin, so Indra got a reaction. He killed a Brahmin. And Purnamasi told us, Harishchandra may have been a demon, but he was in the form of a bull. So you've killed a bull. So we can't come in this water. We'll make our own kund. So on the other side was a place where Harishchandra had dug his hoof into the ground. So Radharani broke her bangle and began to dig in the middle of that hole. All her gopikas broke their bangles and began to dig with their bangles. Then Krishna said, "This is very nice, but it hasn't any hasn't got water in it. Why don't you bring water from my kund?" Gopi said, "No, we don't want anything from your kund. I'll send all my millions of sakis up to Manasi Ganga, and with billions of water pots, we'll bring water from Manasi Ganga and have our own water in our kund." And so Krishna, he doesn't like to see even a bead of perspiration on Radharani, so he gave a signal to all the holy places, the sacred waters. They took one form and went to Radharani and prayed. They said to Radharani, "We thought the perfection of life was to be associated with the lotus feet of Krishna, but now we can see Krishna is worshipping your feet. He's in the greatest ecstasy when he can serve your lotus feet. So if he can satisfy your lotus feet, he's very happy. Now we understand to be associated with your lotus feet is actually perfection of life." So Radharani was suspicious because this person was coming from Krishna's side. But when she heard the beautiful prayers, she said, "All right, what do you want?" So Prabhupada, so now Dinabandhu says, this is the secret for preaching. If you want to preach, first you praise somebody 50 times. "Oh, my dear sir, you're so sweet, you're so intelligent, you have a nice job, nice children, you've been to the best schools. And then he'll say, "Okay, what do you want?" So they praised Radharani, and she said, "All right, what do you want?" So he said, "We want to come into your kund." From the corner of her eye, Radharani glanced at Krishna and smiled. She said, "All right." So immediately the sacred waters personified broke through the wall into Radharani's kund. So there's a passage under the steps, and you can see Radhakund and Shyamakund. Upon seeing Radharani's kund, Krishna smiled and said, "Your kund is beautiful. This will always be my favorite kund, and its glories will exceed my kund." So you'll hear again tomorrow with all the beautiful verses. Maybe he'll sing the Sanskrit from the Puranas, Vishnu Chakravarti. And he'll again read this story for you. So many pages. It's good to hear it twice. Then you won't forget. So one last thing I would like to read to you, because we did have a discussion on this maybe last week, I think it was, about demons in the spiritual world, and also if Krishna leaves Vrindavan in the spiritual world. So there's something very nice here where, in this book, Krishna Sangati, where he brings in both sides of the argument. And so I would like to read from here so you can also hear both sides of the argument and what conclusion that he has reached here. Now this also explains the difference between Prakat Leela and Aprakat Leela and what we find in the Aprakat Leela that's in the Prakat Leela. So some say not everything is there. Sanatana Goswami says, yes, everything is there. But how is it there? That's the question. It may be there, but it's not there in the same way as it is here. So here it goes into a very nice explanation, so I'd like to read that for you so you can get this, the benefit of hearing both sides and the conclusion. In Brihadbhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami points out all the features of the Prakat Leela are also present eternally in Krishna's Aprakat Leela, even up to the killing of demons. He also points out that in the Aprakat Leela, Krishna's associates forget those pastimes. That forgetfulness serves as an elixir to make the eternally recurring pastimes appear to the residents of the Dham as if they are happening for the first time every time. This concept expands our understanding of how in the spiritual world there are no demons, how Krishna never leaves his associates, how pastimes in this spiritual world are eternal. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his commentary on Brahma Samhita 5.2, quotes Sanatana Goswami and Jiva Goswami to verify all the pastimes of the Aprakat Dham appear in the Prakat Dham. And in the Thakur's commentary, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, to verse 37, he says, "The pastimes that manifest themselves on the mundane plane are his visible pastimes, and all those pastimes exist in their non-visible forms in Goloka." A knowledgeable reader may think, well and good, we know many of Krishna's earthly pastimes like rasa dance go on eternally in Goloka. But in Brihadbhagavatamrita, Sanatana Goswami surprises his readers by narrating unexpected Aprakat Leelas like chastisement of Kamsa, Kaliya, Putana, and others. And most important, he describes how Akrura comes to Vrindavan and takes Krishna to Mathura, not only once, but repeatedly, without limit. Thus, Sanatana explains in Aprakat Lila, Krishna leaves Vrindavan again and again. So how is this possible? This is Goloka, he's not supposed to leave. How can Sanatana Goswami's statement that there are demons in Goloka be reconciled with Srila Prabhupada? Now, Prabhupada says, in the spiritual world, there is no facility for the demons. Therefore, when Krishna likes to fight, he comes to this material world. Now, there's two contradictory statements. Furthermore, Brahma Samhita describes how the spiritual sky is protected by 10 tridents that prevent anyone from entering who wants to go without the grace of Krishna to Goloka. So there's two on the other side that say nobody can go there. And Prabhupada says there's no demons. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur describes Prakat Lila as being a variant manifestation of Aprakat Lila. So killing demons in the material world is a variation of a similar pastime in Goloka. So something is going on in Goloka that looks like killing of demons. But what is the difference? But unlike the material world, where the conditioned souls, overcome by desire and hate, become antagonistic to Krishna, there is no such rebellious spirit in the Aprakat Dham. So there is no fertile ground or facility for demons to exist in Goloka. Yet by the grace of Krishna, the forms of demons appear briefly in Aprakat Dham to give Krishna pleasure. And because Krishna's pastimes are eternal, the same pastimes happen repeatedly forever. So now a more detailed analysis is in Dig Darshini commentary on Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Sanatana Goswami admits the concept of Krishna's repeatedly killing demons in Goloka may confuse a person. To remove this confusion, Sanatana answers two questions. How can demons appear in Goloka, and how can the same pastimes happen there repeatedly? To answer the first question, how can demons appear in Goloka? Sanatana says that Kamsa and other enemies join Krishna's eternal pastimes for the same reason as do his associates, to facilitate his enjoyment. But unlike in the Prakat Dham, where Kamsa and other demons are residents of earth who make life miserable for devotees until Krishna finally kills them, in the Aprakat Dham, these demons are made to appear by Yoga Maya, only at the times they are needed in Krishna's pastimes. The demons have no permanent residence in Goloka. They are not recruited from the residence of the Aprakat Dham. They're products of Yogamaya's energies. So the example which we read from Ananda Vrindavan Champo is quoted here, that before the Rasa dance, when Krishna left the gopis, in the intense mood of separation, they were acting out Krishna's pastimes. Some of them were playing parts of demons. So those demons were not gopis, but they were Yogamaya, to facilitate the pastimes in the role of demons, because the role of demon was not in harmony with the gopis' mood. So Yogamaya created gopis with the mood of demons to enact the role of demons, like Putana, Sakdasya, and Chanavarta. Then when the gopis finished their drama, then the demons, gopi demons, disappeared. That they're not permanently there. So Yogamaya, here it says, performs similar magical feats in the Aprakat Dham. She temporarily manifests demons for the pleasure of Krishna and his devotees. Krishna kills them. And when he's inclined to fight again, or when his devotees desire to see such pastimes, Yogamaya again manifests them by her inconceivable power. So this is what we see here, that it's actually Yogamaya who produces demons in Goloka when there's a need. Yes?
They're like sort of
robots. Yeah, they're not. Well, like, yeah, they seem real, but they're not really. They're not inimical, they're not antagonistic, but they're just some magic by Yogamaya. They're not like, you know, like Kamsa, he put Vasudeva and Devaki into jail, and that doesn't happen in Goloka. Kamsa doesn't put Vasudeva and Devaki into jail in Goloka. But there's, you know, Akura comes, some illusory Akura comes, and then he takes Krishna away. It's to kill Kamsa. So, this is what's happening. So that somehow it's, and it's also recurring, and they forget.
Where is this described?
This is, I'm taking this from Krishna Sangati by Shriram Swami, and he has all these numbers after the different paragraphs with references in the back where he gets it from. Like Brihad Bhagavatamrita in different places, he has like little footnotes. And then there's a whole thing in the back where you can look it up and see where he gets it from. Here it says, although the Goloka, and there's another difference between Prakat and Aprakat. In the Prakat Leela, Krishna kills Kamsa only once. In the Aprakat Leela, the pastime is eternal. It happens repeatedly without cessation. Although the Golokavasis still think demons have been there and are likely to come back soon, a form of Kamsa appears only when needed for Krishna's pastime. It has no permanent physical presence in the Dham. Kamsa is not an eternal resident of Goloka, but he repeatedly appears whenever Krishna's pastimes require his presence. But there, after Kamsa's death, when Krishna hears of the Brijbasis' sorrow, he quickly returns to Vrindavan to give them back their lives. So in this Prakat Leela, he stays away for 100 years. And then, but in the Aprakat Leela, he comes back immediately. So that's another difference between Prakat and Aprakat. Okay, so we'll stop here. Any questions or comments on this chapter? Yes? Where is the question of Vritrasura being called a Brahmin? But they still have that respect because his father is a Brahmin. Just like Ashwatthama was the son of Drona and he was not behaving like a Brahmin. But Draupadi still gave him that respect as a Brahmin because of his father and his mother. So the respect is still given that this is a son of a Brahmin. Hari Purush, you had something?
I have a question. How do we understand that when Arishtasura entered Rajagram, the village of Andagram, that so many had miscarriages? It seems that they were all completely protected by Krishna at all times. And here it seems that many did have miscarriages, which seemed to be somewhat unfortunate.
Right.
So how come they had such...
How come they had miscarriages when they're protected by Krishna? That's a good question, which I never thought about. But in light of the Leela, then there must be some reason. I can't really say myself unless I speculate. You know, there's some reason for those living entities to have that miscarriage. But why, I don't know.
In case of Putana, it is said that she ate only those who were followers of Kamsa.
Mm-hmm.
And those children.
Those children who were followers of Kamsa. Yeah, so I don't know, actually. That I can't answer that question. Why they had miscarriages. It just seems very simple. They were, when you hear a loud sound, if you're pregnant, then it's enough to scare you. So they heard the loud sound, and that was it. It's very delicate when you're pregnant, very delicate situation. So I know one of my god sisters, she was dancing, and Prabhupada stopped her from dancing, so you shouldn't dance. Because anything can cause a miscarriage, so. Although it was the spiritual and they're all protected, but still it's material world as well. But I don't know. What can I say? I just take it as face value that there's a loud sound. And of course, even those souls who left, I'm sure they were protected. Even in the miscarriage, they were protected from, you know, whatever their next destination. If you're going to die in Gokula when Krishna is present, then it's not so inauspicious. Dying in the same place while Krishna is present, go straight back to Goloka. Of course, you don't get to be with Krishna there, but then you get to be with him there in the spiritual world. Right. It seems that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be he slipped away as usual. Yeah, every day he slips away. Every day he pretends to sleep and then he goes.
So there could have been the killing of the bull, then going
Yeah, it could be. It said he entered the Vrindavan with Balaram. That's what it said. So. Yeah, all those things. Yeah, it could be he went through that, and then he went to their meeting and say, okay, let's go, let's have the Rasalila. But they said, no, we can't.
Oh, okay. So there could have been time lapse there.
Could have been.
Yeah, okay, I understand.
Yeah. Could have been time lapse. It does seem to be time lapse, because verse 16, it goes into a whole other topic that Narada Muni is going to tell Kamsa. But then in the purport, it talks about Radha, the appearance of Radha Kun. It's like a whole,
yeah.
It's like the next verse is like a break, complete break from the story, and Narada is going to Kamsa. So, but then somehow or other they put all this in the purport. So, it must have been happening that night. Shamakun was before, huh? Near midnight, according to. 1 hour. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Parvati? Mm-hmm. It does say that. Realm of death. But then, even everybody goes there who's going to stay in this world. So he wasn't liberated. He went to, because he had to go back to the heavenly planets and finish. Nalakuvera and Manigriva, those who were demigods, they went back. They weren't liberated. The demons seem to have been liberated, but the demigods went back to their service. The demigods in Krishna's past, like the one who was swallowing Nanda, the snake swallowing Nanda, he went back to the heavenly planets. So it seems that those who are demigods in demons' bodies, they went back, and those who are demons in demons' bodies, were really from the demoniac species, and they seem to have gotten liberation. I mean, if you make a, you can make a study of it, and just make a list of who went where. So the demigods have a chance for further mukti, but the mukti is held for the devotees.
What qualifies the demons to take Krishna's pastime?
What qualifies the demons to take part in Krishna's pastimes? Well, if we study their previous lives, most of them were sages and demigods, and not that many of them were actual demons. Kamsa was a demon. So what qualified him? Because he was killed by Vishnu in his last life. He didn't get liberation. So he had some touch there with Vishnu. The only one I can think of is Kamsa, who is a real demon. He was Kalanemi. And all the rest of them had some history where they got cursed. They were like demigods or sages or something. And so they had also contact with Vishnu.
They can only contact Krishna or Vishnu if you get the mercy of the devotees.
Right. So some of them were Lord Shiva's worshippers. Actually, I think a future demon that we're going to hear about. Oh no, it's not a demon. But they get the mercy of the demigods. They get the mercy of Lord Shiva. And, then they're also sages in their own right. So most of them were pretty qualified, actually, compared to the ordinary person. Most of them were pretty special. They weren't really demons. They were kings, pious kings. They were sages. If you study their history, all in this book, it tells their history. I mean, Putana was sister of Bali Maharaj, and she saw Vamana. She had darshan of Vamana Dev. And she felt affection for him, too, as a mother. Vamana. Putana, in her previous life, she was a sister or daughter, it says two different things, sister of Bali Maharaj. And when she saw Vamana, she felt motherly affection. But then when Vamana put his foot on her brother's head, then she got upset and wanted to kill him. So there's a mixture there. A lot of them have contact previously.
What is that book?
This is a Vihaichi book, Demons in Krishna Leela, in Vrindavan Leela. So I don't know if they still have it, then you can get it. Demons in Vrindavan Leela. And it tells the story from Krishna book, and it tells the Anartha, And it has the previous history for some of them. Yes.
Who were gopis in their previous life?
Well, so we went through that. Oh, you missed the class, I think. That was chapter 29. Some were eternal associates, nityasiddhas, and some were sadhanasiddhas, the rishicharis, the personified Vedas, or sadhanasiddhas. And there were many, many others, like the aborigines. Most of them had contact with Lord Ram in their previous lives, and they got attached to Ram. Ram went marry them. So he said, when I come as Krishna, then we can have a relationship. Most of the majority seemed to be from Ram Lila, and there were others from all the planets, higher and lower, the different incarnations, Vamana Dev and Shesha, the snake girls, they got attached. The aborigines in Lord Rama's time, the herbs in Lord Dhanvantari's time, and so many, in the demigoddesses who saw Yajna incarnation. So all the incarnations, even Matsya, the ladies who saw Matsya, they got attached. They became gopis. So that's the previous history. All of them had previous attachment to the Lord in some way or another. Any other questions or comments? Today we have a very early day. But not next week. Next week it's going to be full, because it's Krishna leaving Vrindavan. And that's quite a heavy, intense, so many things to be said about that. So next week, be prepared to be here the full time. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.